Hello and welcome to the EDP Formula One podcast. I am not Michael Bailey. I'm actually his erstwhile sidekick, as he'd have you believe, Perry Hamilton. Michael is on full Olympic duty at the moment, covering that for the EDP. So he's left the duties for this to me. Very happy to be here and have you with us as well. And I am joined by the editor of Gridwalk.tv, David Tillier. David, how you doing?
Yeah, pretty good today.
Excellent. Just today or in general?
After the weekend, I really enjoyed the race. So, yeah. It was a good result for us Brits, and now the Olympics on. So, it's one of those moments where you can almost be proud to be British.
Almost. Well, the weekend, you could very much be proud to be British. We're going to take a look back at Hamilton's Hungary happiness as he fended off a courageous Kimi and a roaring Roman as they both put in stellar drives for the Lotus team. But it was not all smiles, though. Some people didn't perform as well as they could, and they're going into the mid-season break with a bit of a Budapest bitterness left in their mouths. And we'll have a look and see who those guys are. I mean, speaking of the mid-season break, you may have noticed it's just myself and David today. That's because our podcast team seems to be on a bit of a mid-season break themselves. All of Ben Weaver, John Luton and Kyle Cumbers all on holiday, and we wish them all a very lovely time, and we'll be seeing them after the break when we get together to put together a preview podcast of what we can expect in the second half of the season. But as I say, David, one man not on holidays is you, and you managed to catch the race in all its glory. What did you think?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Right from, first practice all the way through to the race, it was, really, really exciting. I've always kind of liked Hungary anyway. I like the track layout. It's one of those tracks that when I played on one of the F1 games on the Xbox, it's a really, really difficult one, and you can kind of understand what the drivers are going through when they're racing around that track. But it's been great to see Lewis, back on form, the McLaren really doing well. I had my hopes up for JB, but we'll come to that later. Mm-hmm. But it was a really good race. It was nice to see other people kind of really, mixing it up strategy wise, and sort of really bringing the fight to Lewis, even though he'd been pretty much dominant all weekend. And, nice to see, some of the people that have been doing really well lately not doing quite so well and letting other people have a crack at it.
Well, I don't know if they're letting them. I think they'd rather be doing well themselves. But I understand.
I'm sure.
I understand exactly what you're saying. Let's just talk a moment about Lewis's dominance. You said he's been dominant all weekend. That qualifying time that he put in, that was reminiscent of Barcelona, wasn't it? When he was a full half second quicker than Maldonado. Of course, he had that one taken away from him due to some fueling errors. But how do McLaren get that much quicker than the rest of the field and yet not do it consistently?
In all honesty, I don't know. It's hard. They've obviously had some, they've had some major updates to the car lately. They've Silverstone, they couldn't really put any of them to good effect. They obviously didn't really fully understand them in Germany, but they've come to Hungary with probably a better understanding and a better way to set up the car. And they came with a few extra little bits and pieces as well that have made the car that bit quicker and that bit more competitive. I think both the drivers are happy with the way the car's handling at the moment. Jenson Button, one of those guys that really needs to be comfortable in the car to be quick. Lewis less so, but he's becoming a smoother driver as he gets older. So, a good setup does help him. So I think it's a combination of a few little tweaks and a better understanding of their car. And I think that they will probably continue this on for the rest of the season, fingers crossed, now that they've kind of got the handle under. A handle of what makes the car quick and what makes it consistent.
Well, you mentioned Jensen there. I think he was the only driver who had to do a three stopper and still to put the car home in sixth. That's impressive, isn't it? Even though the strategy kind of let him down, we see that JB, he's still got the speed.
Yeah, he's got the speed. It's hard for me to say that sixth was impressive, because early on he looked like he was set for a guaranteed podium position. I can't understand what McLaren were doing with their strategy, because every time they brought him in, they brought him back out into traffic. They sat him behind another car which just wasn't as fast as the McLaren. JB even said to them on the radio that why are the cars that you're bringing me out behind faster than me? And they bluntly said no.
Yeah, that was when he was stuck behind Bruno Senna of Williams there, who, for his part, was making his car as wide as humanly possible and seemed to be matching Jensen, you know, corner for corner, which was kind of stunning to me. But I, like you, when I was watching the early part of the race, I sat there thinking, you know, this could be great. We could have two McLarens on the podium here, maybe even if good strategy, and we know how McLaren have stepped up their game with their pit stops. You know, another 2.8 second pit stop in this race, wasn't there?
Yeah.
You know, and if that can happen and get them out onto a clear track, you know, you get that undercut from the tyres. You could have been looking at a McLaren 1-2, but I think they dropped the ball a bit on that there.
Yeah, I mean, they did have the 2.8 second pit stop, so they are still quick, but they also had a 4 second pit stop as well. So it kind of, you know, their pit stops were a bit sort of up and down, not as good as we've seen out of the last couple of races from them. But, you know, even with, you know, fair play to Bruno Senna, he did really, really well, and I have to say it was a standout performance for him for the entire season.
Mm.
But I think Jensen was quicker in the McLaren, but he wasn't able to show because he was stuck behind people. And also the same when he was behind Alonso.
Mm.
Alonso just didn't seem to have the raw pace that McLaren had, but because of the nature of the track, because of the fact that the DRS zone was pretty much useless, Jensen was never going to get past either of those cars and had to settle for the position that he fell into.
Yeah, I completely agree. But there's a lot of positives that McLaren can take away from this weekend, and also last weekend as well. I mean, they showed, you know, Jensen had a very good drive last weekend. Obviously, Lewis putting it in first this weekend. This time, they actually got to do some dry running in some good weather with their upgrades and stuff. So you've got to think, you know, McLaren will be leaving for the break on a high. Are they where they need to be, or have they just just managed to cling on? Are we going to see a big step forward from them after the break, or is this kind of going to be it from them?
It's hard to say without seeing what everyone else does when we get back from the break. You know, I can't imagine Red Bull, sitting back and accepting the performance that they've had. I mean, Adrian Newey will probably be sitting on the toilet at night with a pen and paper trying to sketch out ideas on ways to make the car faster.
That every other team will then turn around and say, that's illegal.
Exactly.
Because they didn't think of it first. I'm a firm believer in that.
They didn't spend enough time on the toilet.
With a paper and pad, exactly.
Exactly. And, Ferrari have admitted that they are going to go aggressive. They want this championship. They want Alonso to be a world champion. So they're going to go aggressive. They're going to really hunt down the remaining points that are left in the season. Lotus seem to be on a good charge. We can see if this double DRS is that they're developing is going to be a benefit. So yes, McLaren are quick at the moment. Yes, they're doing well. They're gonna have to step up again, I think, if they're going to keep with the pack, because I don't think the goalposts are going to stay where they are at the moment. They're going to need to improve.
Obviously, another person who likes to give their opinion on Formula One, who we normally have on the podcast, is your normal host, Michael Bailey. As we said, Michael's down in London taking care of the Olympic coverage at the moment, but we were fortunate enough to get a quick phone call with him to get his thoughts on the race. So we'll just pop that on for you now so you can hear what Michael has to say. We're very lucky to have on the phone with us now Michael Bailey, normally the host of the podcast, but he's down in London, looking after the Olympics. But would it be fair to say, Michael, that at the moment, body and mind on the Olympics, but heart and soul on the Formula One? Is that fair?
Of course. As mentally good as the Olympics have been, it would be a dereliction of my duty and my passion not to know what's going on and what went on at Hungary. That said, it probably wasn't the most exciting of races we've seen this season, but what a big weekend for Lewis. I'm really delighted that he got that result. I mean, he needed it, most definitely, really did.
Yeah, it was a crack. It wasn't a great race in terms of what we've been spoilt with for the season so far, but a pretty good turn up for Hungary, though, because normally that's a slower race, if you see. I mean, I don't mean speed-wise, I mean in terms of events that were happening. Did you think that it sort of picked up from where it was last year?
I think the issue we've got with all races this year is the bar is so high. I mean, some of those early races were just incredible, and we've probably all been a bit spoiled in a way. But yeah, definitely. I mean, Hungary hasn't really turned out the most enthralling of races over the years. But again, the fact is, you never know who's going to win. You always think that something might go wrong, and everyone is trying to play the strategy a lap at a time. So even a race that probably projects itself as maybe lacking a few incidents, you still keep your attention all the way through, which is something that in the really dull days of Formula One we weren't getting at all. So, I mean, the highlight for me was with the Lotuses and great drive from Kimi Raikkonen, and when him and Romain Grosjean almost came together, it was brilliant stuff. So I mean, it definitely had its moments, and as I said, the willing of Lewis to win certainly made it well worth the watch.
I mean, it almost looked for a minute there like your often predicted winner was going to come through. I mean, Kimi was on a charge. I know you hadn't picked him for this race, but he really was charging. And for a minute there, I didn't think Lewis was going to be able to keep him behind. And you mentioned, of course, the Lotus is nearly coming together. I mean, do you not think it's absolutely great that they're letting their guys race each other like that? There's no team orders there. Do you think that they're giving Grosjean as fair a crack of the whip as they're giving Kimi at the moment?
I think they are. I think they're giving it. I think they're both getting a fair drive. I think they're both being allowed to do what they can. And the respect between the two drivers, let's be honest, they didn't touch. They kept it clean.
Yeah.
But they did as much as they physically could, just as if they weren't driving on the same team. And that's what everyone wants to see. It's just an added excitement when they're both racing on the same team, and you wonder what could happen if it all goes horribly wrong. So it was fantastic to see that. I mean, you look at Kimi's season now, it's actually turning into a great effort from him so far when you consider where he is, how high up he is in the driver standings. And he hasn't won a race. You know, Lotus haven't won a race somehow, which still seems remarkable given the pace of the car. And the two drivers aren't really making major mistakes. Maybe Roman early on in some Grand Prix. But it seems to be just more an air of circumstance that they're not actually getting this win. And when they do get that, and if they keep developing the cars, you kind of wonder what they could achieve this year. Because I certainly think fourth in the team in the constructors championship, which is what they're aiming for, is you know, the minimum really from here.
Oh,
on.
Oh, very achievable, very much achievable as far as I can see with Lotus. Yes, definitely. So you obviously are Lotus going to be your hot tip coming out of the mid-season break?
I don't know. It's almost like starting again, isn't it? I kind of thinking that Red Bull aren't going to be particularly happy with how the last few races have gone necessarily.
No.
I think there'll be a bit of disappointment there. And forget the fact that there's, you know, 2-3 weeks where they can't work. They will be doing something in the way to make sure that the car they rock up with in Belgium will be better than the one they left Hungary with. So
it
all starts again, really. It's all from scratch. And then the one thing the Lotus do need to make sure is that they keep up with the development race, and they've been doing that so far very well.
So it'd be good to see, definitely. Now, I know you're in a bit of a hurry because of how busy you are being in London and what have you, so we're going to let you go in a second, but I do just have to ask, there's been rumours going around that Bernie Eccleston wants to make the Olympic Park into sort of a road track to have a race around once the Olympics are over and done with, and he can, you know, set a track around it. From what you've seen of the Olympic Park and being inside it, is that doable? I mean, is that something that you think could happen, and would it be an interesting race?
It'd be a fantastic race, especially if with the sort of permanent venues that are there. It'd be a spectacular event. I think there would be the room to do it once all the sort of peripheral Olympic stuff has been done away with. I think it'd be a fantastic situation. And I mean, I couldn't quite picture where the track would be and how it would go, but I'm sure it'd have to twist and turn, and it'd probably give you the sort of street circuit characteristics that we've seen in other places. So, I mean, it would be awesome. I'm not sure if we're ever going to see a second Grand Prix in this country that will feature in London. The logistics just seem to be something that it would be much easier than putting the one on in central London, for sure.
Definitely.
So you never know. They've got to figure out what they're going to do with the park and elements of it. So if that happened, I think it would be absolutely brilliant, no doubt.
Great for the sport and great for London as well, especially in the success of the Olympics, which seem to be going great. Michael, thanks very much for coming on, taking some time and having a word with us today. I'm sure we'll hopefully be doing all right in your absence, and we'll definitely be seeing you when you're back for our second part of the season preview pod that we will all get together and have a crack at. But in the meantime, thanks for coming on, and we'll see you soon, yeah, mate?
Absolutely, Ben, most definitely. Thanks for looking after the pod. Very careful hands, mate.
A pleasure. Michael Bailey there, joining us from London. Michael Bailey there, taking time to talk to us. David, he mentioned a lot about, talked a lot about Lotus there. They both had a solid drive in Hungary, you know, both on the podium. Kimi for a while looked like he could have actually got past Hamilton. He was on the charge. Still, we're this far into the race. We've reached the mid-season. You've got a former world champion in Kimi Raikkonen. You've got a young upcoming star in Roman Grosjean. You've got a cracking team that looks to be fast and consistent. Still no victories. What does it take for them to put one in the W?
I think they need that last little bit of development speed. They have improved in qualifying. They've had good race pace throughout the season. It has been a little bit up and down, but they've genuinely had good race pace. So I think it's that last little bit of development that will bring them up to that level. And, you know, as I said before, this double DRS that they're messing around with at the moment might well give them a little bit of extra speed. We'll have to see whether or not they can get that to work well. But I have to say, Kimi was sort of the Kimi of old, really. He managed to be blisteringly quick, but also fantastic with his tyres, brilliant strategy, fantastic bit of driving with him and Roman when they came out of the pits, and they were very, very close together. You know, almost touched, gave us some real excitement for the race. Probably one of the highlights of the race, really. So I think as a duo, they've got something there that they can really sort of work with and build with. And if the car can just come to them that little bit more, then I think they will get a victory before the season's out. I think it will be Kimi. I don't think it'll be Roman. Or if it is, I think it will be Kimi first, or Kimi will have the best opportunity to get that win. But Roman's not far off, and I have to take my hat off to him.
Yeah, he's had a stunning drive coming up from GP2. I mean, he looks a completely different driver than when he was first in, you know, Formula One back in the day. But speaking of completely different drivers, a man who is a completely different driver from one race to the next, it seems at the moment, Mark Webber. You know, the sterling performance at Silverstone, struggling in Hungary. Red Bull overall, I mean, they're leading the championship for the team championship at the moment. They've had both of their drivers standing on the top step of the podium throughout the course of the race. They're putting in good performances, but is it fair to say that at the moment they're kind of struggling?
I think they have possibly dropped behind. It's hard to say what this sort of ruling with the engine mapping really did to them. We don't know whether or not that made much of a difference or not. I think, you know, in Hungary they were distinctly mediocre as a team. They, you know, Vettel kind of sort of never really showed much chance of threatening the podium. Webber had a reasonably good race considering he started in 11th, but that's because he had a poor qualifying. So, you know,
it's swings and roundabouts at exactly. That point, isn't it? You've got to put in the work on the Saturday to reap the rewards on the Sunday.
Exactly. But he still lost ground to Alonso. You know, Alonso had a fairly sort of standard race. It wasn't particularly impressive in any way. But he still managed to get a decent slug of points. And he's actually, even though he only came fifth, he still extended his championship. And goes into the break a good 40 points ahead of Webber.
Very true, very true. Vettel, again, up and down at the moment, it seems. We know he's quick. We've seen he's quick. He's blisteringly fast at times. But where's the guy from the last 2 years who was dominant? That's what I'm missing from Vettel at the moment. I'm not seeing that dominance. I mean, it's good because it gives parity to the rest of the field. Everyone's a contender right now, you know, at least the top. You know, well, you're looking at the top five drivers in the championship, it's all still winnable for all of them. You know, nothing's eliminated. By this point last year, Vettel had a storming lead. I mean, is it the car? Is it him? Are they putting their resources behind Webber because of he's second in the championship? Well, I mean, Vettel's only third. What do you reckon is going on at Red Bull at the moment as to why Vettel is patchy?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think they're going to put everything behind both of them because there's 2 points between them. And I would imagine probably come into the season it will be Vettel that will probably finish up in front. But I've kind of always said, or at least for the last couple of years, kind of said that yes, Vettel is a very, very good driver, and yes, he's a worthy world champion. But I wouldn't say he's in the same class as Alonso or Hamilton. He's not. At times he can demonstrate class and sort of real that sort of racer's edge, but most of the time he just. If he hasn't got the right package and he hasn't got the best car, then he can't excel. As opposed to Hamilton and Alonso, they can do something with a car that, you know, that maybe the car necessarily isn't capable of doing, but they'll sort of extract that performance. As opposed to Vettel has only ever really dominated when he's had a dominating car.
I see. So you're saying it's the car that makes Vettel exemplary, but his ability makes him, I wouldn't say ordinary, certainly a cut above, but he's not in that upper echelon.
Not yet.
No.
But he's only 25.
He's got time. Yes, definitely
he has,
got time.
You know, I think he will get better as he gets older. You know, he is definitely better than he was in the 2010 series.
Definitely.
Season, because he doesn't make the mistakes that he was making then. He doesn't sort of get as hot-headed. At the same time, I think he's still got a little bit of a way to go to become one of the great drivers on the grid. But he's definitely top five without a doubt, without a shadow of a doubt.
Oh, yes, yeah, he's definitely up there. I mean, you don't get to be a double world champion without having that kind of quality, and especially exactly. at such a young age.
Exactly.
So talking of double world champions, Fernando Alonso, as you say, healthy 40-point lead going into the championship, has put in some storming drives, almost Alain Prost-esque in knowing that, you know, he didn't want to push the car too hard. Webber was behind him. He's quite happy with that. Increased his lead. Very healthy, you know, look. But, I mean, Ferrari, they're going to be happy with that lead going into the break, considering the start of the season. Because at the start of the season, Alonso comes out and says, you know, the car's not very fast. You talk to Stefano Domenicali, comes out and says, well, the car's not that competitive. I mean, even Felipe Massa at times has looked competitive in this car. We talked last time on the podcast about how we think Ferrari may be sort of feeding us red herrings about how good, or should we say scarlet herrings about how good the car is. It's much better. Very interesting for you to say that they said they're going to go aggressive for the rest of the season. I mean, isn't now the kind of the time that teams, even teams in the top four or five, start looking towards next season? I mean, do Ferrari even know how to prepare a car for the rest of the season? Because if we look back at the last two seasons of Formula One racing, by this point, Ferrari were, you know, well, I mean, last year, Fernando Alonso was still in the hunt, but Ferrari themselves were almost sort of saying, okay, we're going to look to next year and next year is going to be dominant. Are they breaking that trend now?
I think this year is very different to last year because there were a lot of regulation changes this year between 2011 and 2012. The cars changed quite a bit. There were quite a few things that were banned, quite a few things that that had changed. Next year, I can't remember, that there's a couple of minor changes, but effectively the cars that finish the season this year will turn into evolutions of next year's car. So they don't have to switch development quite as early as they would do. The only things that they've got to consider is things like this double DRS. That's not going to be allowed next year. But a lot of the teams have kind of brought that in as an extra sort of bolt-on device. So I don't think it's going to make too much difference. So,
and of course, we don't see Ferrari having any problems at all with the engine rules that are changing next year, because it's what Ferrari have been doing for years. You know, they're one of the few teams, if not the only team on the grid, that make their own engines. Mm. And, you know, so they have complete control over that. I think you'll see a real good sort of synergy between the two systems.
Yeah. Well, it's 2014 the new engines come into play. So they'll sort of be working on that in the background. But next year, they'll still be running the same engine, still be running the same gearbox.
Gives them even more of a head start then.
Yeah. I mean, I think we'll, they're talking about having some minor changes so that we'll lose the sort of, you know, duckbill platypus looking vehicles, and hopefully they'll be a little bit cleaner, a little bit better looking. But to be honest, I'm kind of used to them now, so it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I say, not a huge change between this year and next. So they can still keep pushing the development, because things that they achieved this year with regards to sort of aerodynamics and sort of overall mechanical grip, they can take into next year and use to sort of fight for next year's championship as well.
Excellent. I see them coming out strong. I really do. I mean, mainly because, as you've said, Fernando Alonso, capable of doing things in a car that the car didn't even know it was capable of. The guys who built it are probably sitting back in the factory scratching their head going, did we make it do that? You know, no, that's genius behind the wheel. And I've really come full circle on Fernando Alonso this season. Haven't liked him the last couple of seasons. Found him to be very, almost petulant in places when the car hasn't performed. And you always hear the commentators and the analysts talking about how, you know, he's such a natural, great driver. And you don't see it, but because he's not willing to put in the time. Now the car's good. You see the Fernando Alonso that everyone's talked about. You see the double world champion. And he really is genius behind the wheel, it has to be said. We've talked once about the sort of semi-local team of Lotus. We'll now talk about the other local team of Caterham. A few races ago, we were singing their praises, you know, Q2, not for the first time, but they certainly looked very, very promising. The thing I can comment most about is that they were very non-commentable this weekend. You know, lackluster qualifying performance, okay, they're at the head of the backmarkers and the new teams, but they always are. And in the race, not very thrilling either, a 17th and a 19th for Kovalainen and Petrov respectively. Was that a flash in the pan, them getting into Q2? Was it a sort of case of right place, right time? Or have they got the right speed and they've got the right, you know, add-ons and the right upgrades? They're just not getting the best use out of them.
I think them getting through to Q2 in the last few times they've done it is more of been it's been more of a case of other people have messed up, so they've kind of capitalised on it. And Kovalainen is you know, I haven't really seen him put a foot wrong this year, at least not that I've noticed. They didn't benefit this weekend from the fact that 22 of the 24 cars finished the race, so you know they're not going to climb the ranks because of that. Also, one of those two that retired was Carter Kay, and so he's always going to be at the back anyway. So you would expect the Caterhams to be ahead of them anyway. You know, Kovalainen actually at the start of the race for the first sort of stint was actually quite impressive because he was holding on to the back of the Toro Rosso and actually keeping up with them. But it was sort of later in the race where they just didn't have the performance and they dropped back. They're still a cut above their other sort of main rivals, the Marushas and the HRTs. But they are, you know, exactly sort of as they say, could have done better. And they should be, by their own standards, should be fighting for points at least some point throughout the season.
They're very much sitting in a no man's land at the moment, aren't they? They're that much further ahead than the Marushas and the HRTs. And yet they're still struggling to, you know, get onto the tails of the Toro Rossos, the Force Indias. I mean, we've seen how the Saubers have taken a massive step up this year as well. But the Williams as well have progressed forward so well. So they're kind of in that no man's land. They're not quite competing with the mid-carders, but they're that much further ahead of the backmarkers. Do you think, does that make it difficult to be motivated in any way at all? Because if you're that much further behind, but you're also that much further ahead, you know, if you're closer to the back guys, then your goal is to, okay, let's stay ahead of these. But if every race you're out qualifying, you think, okay, well, they're behind us again, but we need to get closer and it's just not happening. Is that a bit demoralising for the guys back at the factory, do you think?
I'm sure it's probably frustrating. I don't think there's any way you can question their motivation as a team. They seem very passionate. They seem a little bit more sort of blue-collar than some of the other teams. So as a fan, you sort of gravitate them towards them in a way because they are quite open and honest, and you know they feel like they're sort of just a bunch of guys working hard to achieve, you know, almost like the F1 teams of old, rather than these big corporate machines.
I think a lot of that comes from the owner, though, doesn't it? From Tony Fernandez. I mean, he's the kind of guy that he's heavily involved in the team, but at the moment where he realizes he's out of his technical knowledge depth, he's happy to step back and say, okay, you guys do what you've got to do and I'll get it funded. He's not the kind of guy who's going to wade in and just take over because his name is above the door, if you see what I'm saying. So do you think that they sort of follow his work ethic in that respect and it filters down through the team?
Yeah, I think he's a great guy to own a team like Caterham because he's really passionate about the project. And like you say, he gives them the best that he can. I mean, he's a very wealthy guy, but he can't, you know, put his hand in his pocket and throw tons of money at an F1 program. He has to do it in a cost-effective fashion. But I think, you know, as a setup, that, you know, they're working bit by bit every year. They just seem to be getting closer and closer to a team that looks like it possibly could challenge some of the midfielders. I think the problem that they've had is the fact that everyone in the midfield has moved on a bit.
You know, taking a massive jump, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Saubers, as you mentioned before, they're a lot faster. Williams are cut above what they were last year, but that wasn't difficult. the Toro Rossos are quicker, but, you know, they're probably the worst of the midfield, I'd say. And Force India, again, they're still very quick. So it's kind of, you know, they have improved, they have got better, but everything else has sort of moved along with it. So they've kind of stuck in the same position where, you know, they're sort of the best of the rest, you know, the best of the new guys, although, you know, three seasons in, can you really call them new guys anymore?
I think until you get a podium, you're a new team, aren't you? I think that's pretty much the right.
Yeah.
You could say that. I mean, you're not really, in terms of not necessarily a new team, but you don't really establish yourself until you get podium or at least a top six finish kind of thing. You know, you need to be in there and clean as well, not through, you know, Monaco and a race of attrition in the wet or something like that. But you really need to, before you get properly established. And I don't think that Caterham will be happy until they achieve that goal.
And I think you're saying, you know, you're not really a proper team until you've achieved a podium. I think actually, if you look from Toro Rosso forwards, I think I'm right in saying that every single team at some point has had a win, maybe in a slightly different guise, maybe in, you know, they were called something else, but effectively the team themselves have won before.
Force India included in that as well?
Yeah, well, they were Jordan. So
of
Jordan,
course,
Jordan
yeah.
have won.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so,
of course.
You know, so it's, I think every single team ahead of them at some point has won in one way, shape or form.
Yeah.
So they've yet to experience that and get to that point. The thing is, for a lot of those teams, especially people like Jordan, it was a time when you could be a sort of a lower down team and steal a great result. These days, it's just too close and too competitive for some of these teams to come through.
It's a very, very fair point. But hopefully we'll see some more improvement from Caterham after the mid-season break. As David has quite rightly put, they're a very hard-working team and they are very committed to the sport of Formula One racing. So we should see them sort of have this never sleep attitude as they get all the improvements for the car that they can. So Hungary, we've already mentioned, a bit more entertaining than in previous years, but of course by no means the most breathtaking of races so far this year. Highlight of the race for you, David, a particular moment, a particular event, something that sparks out in your mind?
I think I'd probably have to go back to the point when Raikkonen and Grosjean came out of the pits. It was great close racing, you know, they were very, very fair, but very, very aggressive. And Raikkonen came out on top and then obviously charged away. But it was probably the most exciting part of the race. But then the race overall was kind of exciting, but not exciting all at the same time.
Because there was a lot of potential for things that could happen, yeah. And that kept you on the edge of your seat. And then when it didn't happen, you weren't that disappointed because you'd enjoyed the build-up.
Yeah.
I think to go for my highlight was one of the first corners, Jenson Button sticking. I believe, again, that was Kimi. I believe it was Alonso. It might have been Vettel. I'm not sure. But all I remember is Jenson Button sticking right around the outside and then staying on the outside. And then he's back on the inside. And then he's back on the outside again. Real grit and drive and determination from Jensen going into those first few corners. A shame he couldn't parlay it into something a bit more successful than a sixth place finish. But real grit and from, you know, British grit from Jensen.
He did really, really well there. And yes, you're right. It was a great overtake. I think you're right. It was Vettel
going into the corner at the opening of the start of the race.
You know, he's sort of, you know, Button's a very good overtaker. He's proven it last year, and he proved it in his world championship winning year. When he wants to be, he can be a great overtaker. The only frustrating thing about Jensen is sometimes you think, why don't you just take that chance? Why don't you just push that a little bit harder? And why don't you do a little banzai move? Because you've got nothing to lose, but you know you're not fighting for the world championship. Just give it, have some more balls and just really kind
go
of
for it.
Go for it.
Mm. And also, of course, if people look in their mirrors and are told on the radio that they see Jensen, they might not be expecting it. They might think, oh, Jensen's quite cautious. And then suddenly he's up the inside and there you go. Driver of the weekend, driver and team of the weekend now, if you want to give them both to me together.
Team of the weekend has to go to Lotus for putting in a stellar performance and getting both their drivers on the podium. I can't give it to McLaren because of their monumental sort of balls up with Jensen's strategy. I still can't understand how they managed to do that. Driver of the weekend, it's a hard one because it's either Kimi because of his great race pace and the fact that he nearly won the race, or it's just the fact that Hamilton was just so supremely fast all the way through the weekend. Great practice pace, great qualifying pace, and then won the race. So if I had to go either way, I'd probably say just Hamilton just edges it.
Statistically, you've got to give it to Hamilton on that one, haven't you? Because he was dominant the whole weekend. I'll agree with you and go with Lotus's team of the weekend. It has to be. I mean, when you look at the top 10, you look at the teams that finished, no one else really put in a stellar performance. I mean, we're so used to turning up at these points in the podcast and saying, oh, Sauber did great, or weren't Force India impressive? Both teams looking fairly lackluster, as far as I was concerned, this weekend. So team of the weekend to me definitely goes to Lotus. And of course, as we've mentioned a couple of times on this podcast, the fact that they're letting their drivers race against each other, you know, the experience of Kimi and the new fire in the belly of Grosjean, let them go against each other and see what happens, you know, come what may. I'm sure that there would have been a completely different result had they touched and ended up taking each other out. They probably would have got a sit down and a stern talking to, but letting them race, I think, was a really great idea. And I'm appreciative of that. Driver of the weekend for me, we mentioned him earlier, but we didn't really dwell on him too much. I'm going to give that to Bruno Senna.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of expectation comes with that family name. I mean, we won't dwell on that here because we all know, if you're listening to this, you're a Formula One fan, and you know the expectation that comes with that surname and the endorsement that his uncle gave him. We've yet to see that, really. Strong drive last year, a couple of occasions. This year, we're seeing a similar thing, but we are seeing him in a bit more of a dependable car. Dependable driving with Williams now, doing quite well, and keeping Button behind him was just, you know, absolutely wonderful. Career finish for Bruno over the weekend, so I've got to give that one to Bruno. Well, we're going into the mid-season break now. No races for August, which I'm sure is as upsetting to you as it is to us here in the studio. Looking at the driver leaderboard as we go into the championship break, you've got Alonso sitting first on 164, 40 points ahead of Webber on 124. Webber only 2 points ahead of Vettel on 122. And then Hamilton with 117 and Kimi 1 point behind on 116. David, Alonso really looks like the only person with some breathing room there. I mean, you know, the difference between a second place and a third place on the podium can switch those four names behind him around quite easily, can't they?
Alonso is the man to beat, and it's the man that they're all chasing. I think the guys behind, lining up behind Alonso, you know, it could be any one of those in that second place spot come the end of the year. 40 points isn't a huge lead when you consider, you know, you get 25 points for a win these days.
Mm-hmm.
If Alonso has one bad result where he doesn't finish,
a result similar to how he had in Hungary, where he was, you know, a bit further down the field in fifth,
then his lead is all but gone. But you also have to say, well, Alonso's managed to get in the points for the last 23 races.
An incredibly consistent driver.
Yeah, so you kind of have to say that even if he doesn't have any more wins for a few races, he's going to get the points, and it's going to be a difficult task to kind of play catch up for the other guys. So he's the man, obviously, with the best chance, but it's far from over.
Of course. And just to tack on the end of there, how impressive it is for Kimi Raikkonen to be sitting 116 points, fifth place behind Lewis Hamilton, 1 point behind Hamilton. Hamilton, two race victories this season, and Kimi, none. And that tells you the difference between what a consistent points finish can do against the all or nothing style. Team standings at the moment, I mean, we mentioned earlier, were Red Bull struggling? You wouldn't think it, but to looking at their points, sitting at top of the team standings with 246 points, fairly dominant at the moment, sitting over McLaren with 193, and again, Lotus just 1 point behind them on 192. Ferrari and Mercedes round out the top five with 189 and 106, respectively. Interesting to see Mercedes clinging on in fifth place there, David. We've not really mentioned them at all this podcast. I mean, they were unimpressive at Hungary, but do you see big things coming out of them in the after the break?
I think the fact that we haven't mentioned them really says everything about their race, because I'd completely forgotten that they'd turned up. other than the fact that Schumacher again had a pretty torrid weekend. I mean, when is that guy going to get some luck? I'm actually sort of a rejuvenated Schumacher fan since he's been back. I never didn't really like him that much when he was in his first sort of point in his career. But now I kind of want to see the old boy do quite well. You know, it would be nice to see him get a win or, you know, get some decent results. But yeah, Mercedes have kind of become sort of one of the also-rans for the last few races. They don't seem to have stepped up from a development point of view. They were quick earlier on, and now they're having, you know, terrible reliability issues with Schumacher. So they're really going to have to do something special over the break to claw back that disadvantage. To be perfectly honest with you, I don't see them being any particular threat for the rest of the season.
Fair enough. So I'll ask you, just give me a one-word answer. At the moment, going into the off-season break, who's your hot driver? Who's your hot team?
Hot driver's got to be Alonso. Hot team, yeah, it's a hard one to answer. Probably say McLaren. I'd say Lotus are one to watch out for.
That's where I'm going with that one. Who's hot as a driver? I'd have to say it's Hamilton. Coming off a good win there, he's got the pace, got the fire in his eyes now. He's going to be pushing all the way through. And in terms of team, Lotus are primed for that first win of the season. They've got the pace, they've got the experience behind the wheel, and they've got the passion from the drivers. I reckon you're going to see Lotus do very well after the break. Who needs to step it up? Who needs to start improving, and delivering better performances as a driver? And which teams need to start getting in the points more consistently after the break? Go.
Well, as we said, Mercedes, they need to step things up. I'd like to see Williams carry on improving in the way that they have done. Maldonado needs to grow up a little bit, I think, in terms of the way he's racing. He had another pretty sort of below average race this weekend. So, you know, team wise, I think the people that have really got to mix it up is Mercedes. They've really got to step it up. Driver-wise, Massa is another one as well that needs to really step up his game, not just to keep his seat at Ferrari, but to keep a seat in Formula One, full stop, I think. There's too many good, young, fast drivers at the moment kicking around that potentially could look like a more viable option for Ferrari at the moment.
I agree. For me, driver that needs to step up was going to be Massa as well. Needs to really start putting in some serious drives to show that he's in contention to stay at a top-tier team. A team that I'd like to see push forward as well, Force India. We've talked many times this season about how we expected them to be nearer the front. We expected them to be the mid-class team that had taken the step forward. Turns out it was Sauber. Force India really need to push forward if they're going to start challenging Sauber to get some good points finishes and finish ahead of them in the championship. Still doable. But it's not exactly what you call a long shot, but Force India really, really need to step up their game there as far as I'm concerned. Of course, Formula One, not the only motor racing happening at the Hungaroring. There was the GP2 series that follows them around on their European circuit. The feature race on Saturday, iSports' Jolyon Palmer came 6th and Marcus Ericsson came in 18th. Caterham's Guido van der Garde came 5th, very respectable finish from him. Rodolfo Gonzalez started out his terrible weekend finishing 23rd in the feature. And of course, Lotus, well, Norfolk in name, if not anything else. James Collado finished 4th, great finish for him. And Esteban Gutierrez finished 8th. Moving on to the sprint on Sunday, iSports Jolyon Palmer came 5th, respectable. Marcus Ericsson did not finish that race, so rounding out a pretty poor weekend for him. Caterham's Rodolfo Gonzalez followed up his 23rd in the feature with a 16th in the sprint, so fairly poor for him as well. But Guido van der Garde brought it in 10th. And for Lotus, James Collado came 6th. And Esteban Gutierrez actually came in 1st and won that race for his team. So a pair of good finishes for Lotus in that sprint race. The standings as they go into the break before the end of their season. For the drivers, you've got Gutierrez in 3rd place on 150 points. James Collado sitting behind him in 4th and 132 points. And van der Garde sitting in 5th with 129 points. So you've got 3 local drivers, line astern from 3rd to 5th. That should be a great finish to the season for those guys. The other local prospects, Palmer sitting in 10th on 62. Ericsson in 12th on 56, and Gonzalez bringing up the rear for the locals in 19th on just 6 points. 1 points finish in the whole season for him this year. Team-wise, you've got Lotus GP sitting 1st on 282 points. It's a fairly commanding lead. Caterham 6th with 135, and iSport just behind them in 7th place with 118 points. Only 3 more rounds to go in the GP2 series, seeing as they only follow the F1 through Europe, and we've got some worldwide races coming up. So 6 more races to go, and the pressure is going to be on to perform after the August break. It really is a sprint finish. Though that's when we're going to return after the August break. Normal service will be resumed with Michael Bailey taking the reins once again. For all the latest Formula One news, including looks at the local Caterham and Lotus teams, head to edp24.co.uk/F1, and you can contact either myself or David from Gridwalk, and relieve the boredom of 4 weekends without racing. You can catch us on Twitter. I'm at PedHD56. And David?
I'm at Gridwalk.
That's excellent stuff. And also be sure to follow at Michael J. Bailey to keep up not only with the latest F1 news, but follow him as he's spending his time around Olympic Park and get all the updates from there as well, cheering on GB, not just with Hamilton on the top of the podium, but with all of the fun going on in London this summer as well. Just remains for me to thank Dave Tillier. Thank you very much, Dave.
No, thank you for having me.
Obviously, our thanks go out for Michael Bailey taking the time to come and join us on the show. So that's it from us until after August, where we will be putting together a preview podcast for the second half of the season. And we'll see you then. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.